Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here we are. It's been a long, long time. It's Peter Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage, and it, as always, it is an honor and a privilege, and it's been Beowulf, what, about 2-3 years, I guess, since I last sat in the big man's chair. But I got to tell you, talk about a man being prescient, and that is Michael Savage. When I think back on the things he was saying when I was filling for him, in for him 3 years ago, for a number of years before that, I mean, he was the first guy that got up there and pointed the finger at these rabid Republicans who were spending us into oblivion. And the reason I start this up and point this out is that why do we have a majority Democratic Congress and a Democrat in the White House? Because of what the Republicans did when they were in power. And I don't know, do you trust them now? I mean, they've had this kind of conversion, right? It's like the alcoholic that's fallen off the wagon and is kind of white-knuckling it. By white-knuckling, I mean they haven't really made a basic change, but they're kind of holding onto the armrest. Their knuckles are going white because they really want that drink, but they're denying themselves that drink until they get the opportunity to do it once again. And so I'm kind of wondering if the Republicans do get back into power, the way a lot of the pollsters are saying that they've got a chance to get the House back, maybe even the Senate. And let's suppose in 2012, Obama is a one-term president. Do you trust the Republicans to have this conversion to going back to being small-C conservatives, small government conservatives, less taxes? Really, do you? Can you envision the day that they would actually roll back anything that's being done by this particular Congress of Socialists today? You know, I mean, I got to tell you, I'm jaded. I can't sit here and tell you that if the Republicans have all of that back, that they would do much differently, except possibly they might move at a slower pace. And that's what they did last time. You know, when I hear all this stuff about, oh, politics is the art of doing the possible. It's the art of compromise. I started to think about, you know, reading about John Adams or Benjamin Franklin as they were working, the founding fathers, to try to reconcile their differences of taxation without representation with King George III. Did they compromise? No. Did they try to persuade the British Parliament, the English King, that they shouldn't be taxed without representation? Yes, they did. But the operative word is they tried to persuade. They didn't. Ultimately, of course, they said, look, if you don't agree with us, we're going to go our separate ways. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, I mean by that that I'm sick and tired of these doggone compromises again and again. Because when you take on squishes like Bob Dole or Olympia Snow or all of these squishes that are called Republicans, what happens? Slowly but surely, the heat is turned up on the pot, and pretty soon the water is boiling. You don't even know you're bloody well in it. Isn't that what happened the last time? It's a long legacy. It goes back to Bob Dole and these guys before them in the House of Representatives, the Republicans, constantly compromising. What good is it to compromise on this stuff? I mean, look where they've led us. I remember Bob Dole, then the majority leader of the Senate, but for the most part, he was minority leader. I mean, coming out of a set of negotiations, you know, wiping the sweat off his brow and saying, you know, 20% of American people aren't going to have to pay taxes anymore, income taxes. And then pretty soon it was 30 and 40. And what was it the last time? 48% of American families are not paying any taxes at all. I mean, everybody is going to pick the flesh off the golden goose that lays the eggs until the goose is dead. So I think squishes should be expelled from the Republican Party, squeezed out like a bad pimple. Because I tell you, those people that have absolutely no political philosophy are whores. These people, these political whores that constantly compromise with the other side for the sake of getting legislation passed within the Republican Party are really responsible for where we are today. And we're on the abyss of joining these socialist basket cases economically like Canada, like Sweden, like France, like Great Britain. And I don't know about you, but I have had it. That's not what I signed on for. I came down and left socialist Canada because I saw the American dream, the American system, which was one of free enterprise, the opportunity to rise and become whatever you can become. And now these guys want to turn this into a socialist knockoff of a European country or a Canadian country. And I say, I've had enough. And I'll tell you something. In a way, when you take a look at what's happened now, it's grand in this respect. People are finally standing up and saying, what the hell is going on? They finally have joined Michael Savage in seeing what's going on in this country. And finally, because the other side got total control, you see what they really stand for, which is what? Everything through government. Cradle to grave. They want to look after you. They want to sit there and want you to honor them for looking after you. And of course, what is the cost in all of this? The cost in all of this is huge because the government is inefficient. The people that operate government could not survive in a free enterprise system because, quite frankly, in a free enterprise system, unless government gets involved, is what? Survival of the fittest. You can't tell me that government, with all of its inadequacies, all of its bureaucracy, can ever survive in a competitive market. They cannot. That's why they require and demand a monopoly. You and I have become tax slaves. These morons, these imbeciles that are spending the life energy of generations yet to be born should be indicted for gross negligence. Not yet. I want to finish off by saying this. It seems to me that these political whores have absolutely no philosophical foundation upon which they rest. All they care about, really, under the guise of looking after you, is themselves. They are the most selfish, the most self-centered individuals you're ever going to meet. And you see it again and again. Remember Al Gore when he was vice president, how little of his income that he gave to charity? You remember that? So they assuage their own conscience by extorting your life energy. Because remember, money is what? It's life energy. Why is it life energy? Because we're here for a finite period of time. And when we go to work for ourselves or somebody else, we are giving up some of our finite life energy. And so therefore, money really is your life energy. So when people, these politicians, these scoundrels, these rascals, these whores come after your life energy, you should say no. How could they, if they had a conscience at all, think that they could use your life energy? They dole it out. They take and extort your life energy. It's not just taxes and money. It's your life energy. We're tax slaves. We're no longer sovereign individuals in this country. All right, here's the number, 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-TALK, T-A-L-K. All right, let's take our first call. First up, we have in New York, Jim. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Yeah, the only thing I've got to say is you can't be knocking into the Republicans right now because they're the only things we got.
Well, isn't that always the what ends up happening? You vote for the lesser of two evils and look where it's gotten us.
We have no choice.
What do you mean we have no choice? Of course we have a choice.
Tea Party and switch the vote with the Republicans, we're going to wind up with the Democrats.
So tell me something. Other than the degree of severity in terms of deficit spending, what is the difference between the Republicans under Bush and the Democrats under Obama today?
Well, we weren't headed for communism under Bush.
We weren't? He left us with a $500 billion deficit. He passed the biggest entitlement of the time since Medicare, which is the prescription drug benefit program.
Then you keep knocking Republicans, and we'll wind up with, communism. You just have a good old time.
Thank you, Paul. I don't understand this. Please, somebody, please help me. Because I don't understand this mentality of, well, it's the lesser of two evils. Now, granted, the Republicans seem to have been moving us in that direction at a slower pace, but nevertheless, we're moving in exactly the same direction under the Republicans as we are today under the Democrats, albeit at a faster clip. I'm telling you, I don't want the old Republicans back, because it makes the rest of us sit in that pot as they turn up the heat until the water starts to boil and we can no longer jump out. At least when the other side is in power, you've got conservatives and independents saying, wait a minute, what the hell is going on? I'm actually going to go out there and protest. How long, other than Savage, I cannot think of another national talk show host who criticized the Republicans while they were going on this spending spree. Oh, there are plenty of them after the disaster of the 2006 election. Oh, they came. Oh, yeah, they all came out then. But I can't, and nobody that I know of that I listen to on a national level of any significance, other than Michael Savage, sat there and rang the bell to warn everybody what the hell was going on. All right, I need to take a break here. Kind of, smooth out my ruffled feathers. The number is 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-TALK, T-A-L-K. This is Peter Weisbach, in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. Well, thank you so much for joining me. It is Peter Weisbach filling in once again for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. It is my honor and privilege to be here. It is nice talking to you. Of course, I think some of us are going to butt heads today, because if you've just joined us, I'm pointing out the obvious, which Savage has, well before anybody else, which I've pointed out. The other national talk show hosts only had this day of this kind of insight after the debacle of the 2008 election, when the Republicans lost their majorities. But I must tell you that the Republicans have made this possible. The way they mishandled their 6 years of majority government has made it possible for the Democrats to be where they are today. And I say nonsense to this idea of, the politics is the art of compromise, I think. Nonsense! If our founding fathers had taken that tack, we'd still be a colony of Great Britain. All right, let's go on to Sherman. Welcome to the Michael Savage Show.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, Peter, got to tell you, the Republicans are absolutely no better than the Democrats. And their past performance has proved it. We needed a candidate. What'd they give us? John McCain. John McCain, I'm going to reach across the aisle. He was once a hero, now he's just a politician. Before that, they gave us Bush. They don't really want to win either. They're just as bad, maybe even worse.
All right, sir, thanks for your call. I must tell you this, that I have a lot more respect for some of these hard left-wing Democrats than I do for the squish Republicans. And McCain is a perfect example. I think McCain makes many of the compromises that he makes because he has a high need to be accepted by everybody. Now, you take somebody like Barney Frank, he doesn't give a damn about anybody other than where he wants to go politically. And one thing about the Democrats, when they get to power, they wield power, and they wield power in the direction of their political leanings. Unlike the Republicans, when they get unfettered power like they had with the Republican Senate, Republican House, and a Republican president, They were busy trying to concoct ideas of how they could be a perpetual majority by trying to do buying votes. I have no respect for that at all. I have nothing but contempt for people like that. Next up, we have in Chicago, Bob. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good afternoon, Peter. I agree with much of what you're saying, but the conclusion I disagree with for this reason. When a person has cancer, they have to choose between chemo or other, doing nothing or alternative treatments or whatever. And we have, when you're in a life and death situation, if you're not ready to check out, then you choose chemo. Chemo is bad; it's poison, but sometimes it kills the cancer. And I look at the Republican Party like chemo. It is.
God almighty. What an analogy.
Well, I mean, we are stuck with this choice. The third party option is dead.
But we're not. Let me ask you this. At one point, the Republicans appeared. The Whigs disappeared.
Yes.
Right? Well, so why is that not possible again? Well, conversely, should we not, at the primary level, knock out all these squishes?
Consider the primaries. In many of the states, you asked how did we wind up with John McCain. In many of the states, they have open primaries, and you can be sure that many of those states are very strong Democrat states. They cross over. They pick the weaker
candidates.
And then we got another problem called gerrymandering.
Okay, got it. I got to go. I'm going to go for a break, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I think it's the most bizarre thing to have primaries, quite frankly, and to have them open. Each political party should indeed choose their own candidates. This is Peter Weisbach, in for Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. It is Peter Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. It is always an honor and a privilege to be here, and the topic this hour is the horrors of politics, which really, I think, define a lot of the Republicans. And I say that because of the way they mishandled that opportunity when they had 6 years of a majority government, and they could have done so much to return this country to freedom and to its roots. Instead, they frittered away the opportunity. I mean, look, enough said. $500 billion was the last annual deficit left by Bush. They brought in the prescription drug benefit. Need I go on? I mean, they were so busy trying to plan a perpetual majority that they just blew it big time and actually set the table for what's happening today. I want to read just two or three columns, paragraphs, I should say, of a piece written by Robert Samuelson. I think he writes for Newsweek, doesn't he? He's The Economist. And he talks about the poisonous politics of self-esteem. He says, some while back, I proposed a concept that did not stick. I called it the politics of self-esteem. My argument was that politics increasingly devotes itself to making people feel good about themselves, elevating their sense of self-worth, and affirming their belief in their moral superiority. By contrast, the standard view of politics is that it mediates conflicting interests and ideas. The winners receive economic benefits and political privileges. The losers don't. This is an apt time to resurrect my rival theory because it helps explain, I think, why the healthcare debate became so inflamed. The two theories are not incompatible. They can and do coexist. In fiscal 2010, the federal government will distribute about $2.4 trillion in benefits to individuals. Taxes and regulations discriminate for and against various groups. Politics shapes this process, but in truth, differences between parties are often small. Democrats want to spend more and don't want to raise taxes, except on high earners. Republicans want to reduce taxes, but don't want to spend less. Vast budget deficits reflect both parties' unwillingness to make unpopular choices for whose benefits to cut or whose taxes to boost. Now, I think he makes valid points here, but I think the problem is this. I think that for the most part, now there are exceptions, but for the most part, these people that we have sent to politics cannot make it in the private sector, where basically the jungle rules, right? Unless the government is regulating your particular industry to the nth degree, it is indeed survival of the fittest. And so therefore, you have a situation where you have a bunch of losers in politics who are calling the shots, making the rules, and sitting there and trying to make what? Themselves feel good because they have such a high need to be what? Liked by others. They seek the approval of others, and they do it by presumably giving something to somebody for nothing. And of course, there are many, many people in this country that believes hiding behind the patina of legality is okay to steal somebody else's life energy. And that's what it's really about. Now, do we trust these Republicans, some of whom now say that they've had a total conversion? They remind me of these communists. You remember that? When the Iron Curtain fell, all of a sudden, overnight, some of these communists became capitalists. And they did, of course. They ripped off the system, but they presented themselves as capitalism, having embraced capitalism. Why? Because first and foremost, they were married to what? Power. They wanted power above all else. The strongest opiate known to mankind, more so than sex, is what? Power. People seeking power, wanting power, clinging to power, seeking power, grabbing power. The Republicans are no different. So, God, I don't know whether they can be trusted this time around. Let's go to Steve in Austin. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Peter. I agree with you wholeheartedly that the Republicans can't be trusted. This last election cycle, we had to choose between a party which promised to run us off a waterfall in a jet boat and another that promised to run us off the same waterfall in a canoe. It's time for us to do something different.
And what is that?
If we continue to put career politicians in office, we're going to continue to get what career politicians do. There's a plan out there to remove the politicians from the House of Representatives, replace them with citizen legislators. You know, that's
what is that plan? What is the plan?
The plan is called Get Out of Our House. And basically what it does is it's a vetting process for us to pick the best and brightest from each individual district, have them document how they're going to vote on every major issue of the day, and send them to Washington with an agreement that they're going to go up there, they're going to vote the way they said they would vote, they're not going to have accepted a single dime of special interest money, they're not going to be tied to either one of the two-party systems, and after they've served a term or two terms, they're going home.
So how can you, enforce this? Because a few years ago, I think before the 1994, or maybe it was 1998, some of them took pledges that they would only serve, I think, two terms in the Senate and I think six terms in the House. And one of the politicians out of the state of Washington, George Nethercutt, I think was his name, kind of really flicked his finger at that gave the birdie when his time was up and continued to serve. Now, Sam Brownback, on the other hand, Senator Brownback from Kansas, who had made a pledge that he would only serve, I think, two terms, made good. That's why he didn't run again the last time. So how do you enforce what you're talking about?
Well, in order for an individual to be chosen to be the candidate in their district, they're going to have to go through six or seven different rounds of selection sessions where they're going to sit down with nine other.
I understand all that, but what you're really saying is you have to hold them. They have to be good to their word, ultimately, because you have no power to make them not run again, to force them not to run again. Right? Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. I'm supposed to hang up on it. Okay. Next up, we have Rich in New York. Good afternoon. How about that?
I agree with you 100% about about the fact that the Republican Party is so squishy. And you have to ask yourself, when the data shows that conservatives outnumbering liberals in this country,
yeah,
how is that possible?
How?
And, excuse me?
How?
Well, it's the influence of what Mike refers to as the fifth column, what I refer to as the liberal lamestream media and their influence, and I think people take that for granted.
But, you know, you got every bit of data tells you that the mainstream media is losing out. I mean, the information now that's available, it is so fractured that the networks, television networks, certainly don't have the influence that they once had. The major newspapers of the country don't have the same level of influence that they once had. So really, is that a valid point these days to say that it's because, look, I mean, you and I are communicating. On top of that, we just had the caller beforehand.
Take turns. I'll name a liberal outlet, and you name a conservative, and I'll keep going for 20 minutes. I mean, you just can't compare them. You have Fox News, big deal. They're a cable network.
We got to shut them down, you know. They're biased. They have to be controlled because they're so biased.
Well, let me name the conservative. You have Fox News, you have talk radio like this, and you have the blogosphere. Now, on the in the liberal arena, you have the New York Times and just about everything in print. You have ABC, NBC, all the major TV networks, along with their cable affiliates, and then you get into other forms of mass media propagation through Hollywood movies, through public schools, through universities, even Madison Avenue.
Okay, it's over. We have no hope. Is that what you're saying? It's over. We have no hope.
No, I think we're making it. I'll tell you what. It made me sick that President Obama got elected, but I think it's something that was going to be a good thing in the long run because it has spawned the Tea Party movement and
it's
going to give the Republican Party an enema.
Well, I was going to say we're going to give them some Giuliani's. You know what I mean? Some family jewels.
Okay.
All right, sir. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Yeah, you're right, of course. I mean, I don't, look, there are many things that are frightening about the direction the country's going in, but isn't it better to see up front what the hell is going on? Isn't it better that these people have exposed themselves for what they really are? Could there have been a Tea Party movement if the Republicans were in power? No! Were we moving in the same direction? Yes, but at a much slower rate. So, in a way, part of this, I must tell you, I think is a good thing for the country. Because finally, we have independents standing up and saying, what the hell is going on here? We have conservatives saying, you know, enough of these compromises. These squish candidates don't get us anywhere. Most conservatives give to charities. They just don't want their money being squandered by an inefficient, overbloated bureaucracy. They want to be in control of the life energy, their life energy that they share with others. I mean, I'm not against helping people. That's not what being a conservative is all about. I am all for helping people, but I want to help people. I don't want to become a perpetual source of mother's milk for somebody where their teeth are clenched to the teats of the welfare state. I want to help people become self-sufficient. I don't want people to become perpetual welfare cases. It's not good for them. You know, there's nothing like having a sense of accomplishment of looking after yourself. I mean, it's been proved again and again that these welfare states destroy families and destroy individuals. Everybody likes to have a sense of accomplishment, from the most menial task to the most highbrow professions that exist. Everybody, whether you're cleaning a floor, cleaning up some rubbish, takes a great deal of pride in doing a job well, looking back and saying, you know, I did that. I contributed to my family. I contributed to my city. I contributed to my country. I have looked after myself and my family. Instead of these perpetual people that constantly want to make people more and more people dependent on the government so that they themselves can feel good and make themselves feel good and make other people more beholden to them to give them back their position of privilege. And make no mistake about it. Today's politicians are yesterday's aristocrats. It is unbelievable by the way some of them act and carry on. They weren't sent there perpetually to be politicians, to be rulers, to be master servants. They're there to be civil servants, servants. They're sent there by us. The power rests with us. That's what makes the American system so unique, that the power flows from us and we lend it to our representatives for a period of time. All right, our number is 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-TALK. This is Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Weisbach in for Michael Savage. Thank you for joining us. Somebody wanted to say now, Weisbach, are you a Obama fan? No, I'm not. Are you a Democrat? No, I'm not. I am a conservative slash small L libertarian, and I am appalled at what is happening at the present time. To this country, the direction that it's being pushed under all of the possible levers that are at the control of the Democrats, both in the House, Senate, and in the White House. And I'm appalled that the Republicans made this possible. And make no mistake about it, the reason we are facing what we face today is because of the way the Republicans governed when they were in power. So having said that, you know, I sit back and say, do I trust the Republicans? People say, look, you got to vote for the Republicans because they're the lesser of two evils. My God, this is terrible stuff, what's going on. It's true it's terrible stuff that's going on. But in a way, too, when you think about it, isn't it good that finally there's been full exposure as to what the agenda is of this left-leaning Democratic Party, which is really tacked to the left? It's no longer the party of 30, 40 years ago. It is simply a left-leaning, extreme left-leaning party, and certainly run by that 25 or 30% of Democrats that are lefties. I mean, real lefties, socialistic lefties. And so, no, I'm not an Obama fan. I'm not a Democratic fan. But I'm a fan of what this country stands for, the principles on which it was founded. And I'm certainly for limited government, low taxes, small civil service, and for the politicians always to remember that they are there to serve us. We are not there to be of service to them. Let's go to Ron in Pittsburgh. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Peter, good to talk to you. Hey, real quick, as far as Pennsylvania goes, I mean, we have closed primaries here, and unfortunately they got us Arnold Spector for so many years, and personally open primaries are a joke. But that being said, as conservatives, we have to hold Republicans accountable for when they come in and what they say they're going to run on conservative ideas. They get elected and they go the other direction.
We so what do you do at that point? What does one do at that point?
Well, number one, if they don't, you have to vote them out. And number two is the reason why there's probably so much mediocrity and people giving up what they say they're going to do is there should be probably getting to the point where we need term limits for congressmen and senators. Because and there doesn't seem to be any other answer. People are being wishy-washy just to get reelected. As long as they're going to worry about getting reelected again, then they're going to try to go down the middle of the road.
Well, that's true, and I'm kind of a fan of term limits, but you know, I think that you really could, even under term limits, if there were term limits, say, on local government, county government, state government, federal government, I mean, one could pretty well become a career politician on that basis, you know, serve out your term limits on the city level, serve out your term limits on the county level, serve out your term limits on the state level, and then serve out your term limits on the federal level, and then get appointed to something, and you could really become a politician for most of your adult working life.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But on the federal level, it's yeah. just it's just getting to the point where, for lack of a better way to put it, it seems like too many politicians are just playing up for sale. And
Well, they are. Not they are. Look, I mean, they are. That doesn't mean that they have to be taking money in their pocket. But of course they're for sale. They're for sale constantly with respect to the money that they're taking in to fund their campaigns. Wait, sir, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. I got to move along. Next, we go to New York. Jody, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, the reality here is very simple. Would you make the acknowledgement that you're voting for the lesser of two evils? What are you acknowledging? You're acknowledging you're voting for evil. And the idea that you don't have a choice is a canard. You always have a choice. You just have to have the energy and will to act on that choice. And what that requires is learning about the Constitution, activating, doing what you can to promote the candidates, find them, and get others involved in promoting them and electing them.
Excellent point. Thank you very much. And on that note, we're going to end this hour's discussion. But coming colonies a day, we're going to be joined by Harvey Silverglate, who is a defense lawyer, but, you know, talks a bit about how we are criminalizing almost every act now. Business acts, business mistakes are being criminalized, and that most of us could be committing at least three felonies a day without even knowing it. This is Peter Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. Don't go away.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Peter Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. I want to thank you for listening. Now, the average professional in this country wakes up in the morning, goes to work, comes home, eats dinner, then goes to sleep, unaware that he or she has likely committed several federal crimes that day. Why? Well, the answer lies in the very nature of modern federal criminal law, which have exploded in number, but also become impossibly broad and vague. In three felonies a day, Harvey Silverglate reveals how federal criminal laws have become dangerously disconnected from English common law tradition and how prosecutors can pin arguable federal crimes on any one of us, even for the most seemingly innocuous behavior. We're joined now by Harvey Silverglate, who is the author of Three Felonies a Day, and he is a practicing attorney. Harvey, thanks for making this time available.
My pleasure, Peter.
All right, so let's talk a bit about this. You say that most of us or most professionals have committed felonies in a day, not aware of it?
That's correct. And the reason I say that is because there are federal statutes, some of which, by the way, have been on the books since the 30s and 40s, some of which are more recent, that can be stretched or morphed to cover an awful lot of what the normal busy professional does in the course of a day. It's just a question of, do the feds want to get you, or are they not particularly interested in you?
So that sounds a bit like what the Soviet Union used to be like. There's this plethora of laws, and then the bureaucrats kind of indiscriminately apply them to certain people.
In fact, that's in the introduction to the book, a comparison to the Soviet system. You know, Stalin had a police chief, Beria, who used to say, "Show me the man, and I'll find you the crime." That's exactly how totalitarian societies and even authoritarian societies work. And, you know, even today in Russia, where there's no longer a Soviet Union, you find an awful lot of prosecutions of unpopular people for so-called tax laws and various, quote, business frauds, close quote, that turn out to be based on statutes that nobody can understand or that appear to have no limits.
Now, maybe 3 decades ago, 4 decades ago, somebody was charged with a crime. There was a single count. Nowadays, that's unusual. Like, some people are charged with 20, 30, 40, 60 different crimes.
I'll tell you what. First of all, one of the reasons for that is, take the federal mail fraud statute. Let's say that you're engaged in some business and you sent out 300 letters to people. The feds claim that the whole scheme was a fraud, okay? They will charge you with 300 separate counts, one for each letter mailed. And that's because federal jurisdiction is based primarily on the fact that you're using the mails, interstate commerce, in other words. That's what gives the federal government jurisdiction. And then to make it seem like you are, you know, the worst criminal in the world, they will make it 300 counts, one for each letter. The newspapers will say, wow, so-and-so must really be guilty. He committed 300 crimes, according to the Department of Justice. But it really simply means you've mailed 300 pieces of mail.
All right, tell me about, Bradford Councilman, I think is his name. He was charged in Massachusetts with violating the wiretap laws back in 2001.
The reason I put that in the book, and it's toward the end, it's kind of the coda to the whole book. Here's this guy who's a perfectly legitimate guy, an honest guy, a hardworking guy out in western Massachusetts, working for an internet service provider. This is a provider that receives email from its customers and then resends them under its own name to various the recipients. And this councilman, one of the things he did, he was responsible for making copies of the email as they came in to his company's computers, and then he made temporary copies, and then he resent them. As soon as he resent them and he was assured they arrived at their destination, he would erase, delete the emails. He had no use for them. But the feds claimed that he was guilty of wiretapping because they said technically what he did fell within the federal wiretapping statute. That is, a message was en route, and he, quote, intercepted it, close quote, and he then made a copy. Now, it turns out, of course, that isn't quite true. If you want to be technical about it, this email was not en route in transit when he made a copy. It had stopped in his computer, even though it stopped for a fraction of a second. So he wasn't even technically guilty. But forget about the technicalities. That this ordinary transaction in the course of an ordinary business would be seen by some federal prosecutor as a felony is absolutely mind-boggling and dangerous for anybody who engages in commerce. It turned out that a trial judge initially agreed with us that this was not a violation. Then he disagreed with us. Then he agreed with us. He ultimately decided that he would dismiss the indictment, that we were probably right, that it wasn't covered. The Department of Justice went to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals said it, a three-judge panel, it agreed with us. It dismissed the indictment. The government went to the full bench of the Court of Appeals, that is the full membership, not just a three-judge panel. They reversed the panel, saying, no, they agree with the Department of Justice. Now, mind you, poor Brad Councilman, he's supposed to understand what the law requires, and he's supposed to understand it's a felony for him to make this copy, when all of these wise judges were disagreeing and arguing among themselves as to whether this was a violation. So we went to trial, and fortunately the jury, which had more wisdom than all these judges, the jury just acquitted him, obviously feeling that this was absurd. Now, it took a jury in that case Brad was lucky. He went to trial. He had a lot of guts. He really felt he hadn't committed a crime. But, you know, 95%, and that's not an exaggeration, that is a statistic, 95% of federal defendants plead guilty because they don't want to risk the huge prison sentences that the feds give out, the judges give out, when you're convicted, especially of a white collar.
Not to mention the costs
of
defending yourself.
I mean, the councilman is still paying the lawyer's bill, and we really went easy on him. The costs are enormous.
And it took 6 years, right?
It took 6 years. Yeah. The guy was really a wreck. And I have to say that he's a hero of mine. He actually stood up for 6 years, despite the fact that, mind you, our claim was that the statute is vague, and therefore the indictment should be dismissed, because the Constitution, the Fifth Amendment, which gives every one of us due process of law, one of the things that due process means is that the statute is clear, that you know what your legal duty is, and you, if you knowingly violate it, you're committing a crime. That isn't true in the councilman case, obviously. And nonetheless, he was unable to get this indictment dismissed and had to go to trial. But the frightening thing is that on the basis of such a vague statute, people do go to prison, and that's why 95% plead guilty. They either don't have the money, or they're afraid, in the event they're convicted, that they'll get a much longer sentence than if they plead guilty.
So, Harvey, tell me, how do we get to this point? I mean, we have this concise Constitution with the Bill of Rights is, what, about 21 pages. We've got speech codes at universities where free speech is being throttled. We have prosecutors who aren't necessarily seeking justice, but wanting to make a name for themselves, actually wanting laws that are vague and open to interpretation. How did we get to where we are?
Well, you know, you have asked the $64 question, and in writing this book, I only have a few pages with respect to why I think this happened and what I think could be done about it. I spent most of the book showing that this is now the problem that we're in. Now, you asked the $64 question. I was afraid you were going to ask that, but let me give you my best theory, my best understanding. This phenomenon started about the mid-1980s. I've been practicing law since 1967, so I've been around a while, and it wasn't like this when I started. About the mid-80s, I noticed that this started to happen both on the campus, where there were these very vague speech codes that you couldn't say or do anything that was, for example, offensive to somebody. Well, what in the world does that mean? And how can that be a rule that, you know, you violate it and you could be thrown out of college? So there was this problem of complete vagueness and overbreadth on the college campuses where you supposedly have free speech and academic freedom. But in fact, if you offend somebody, you could be thrown out of school. So you had that situation. And then just a couple years later, I noticed this similar problem with the enforcement of vague federal statutes. Previously, most of the cases that I had, nearly all the cases that I had, the conduct that was being charged would have been criminal conduct. We would have been quite clear. My client would have violated it, and we would have to hope that maybe we can get a jury to acquit. But basically, it was a pretty close to a lost cause. But then about the mid-1980s, they started indicting people who had done things that were quite ordinary, professional, day-to-day things. And again, what was happening there, similar to what happened on the college campuses, there was no longer an appreciation for the specificity of language, the meaning of language. And language no longer was serious. It no longer really meant what it said or said what it meant. And I noticed this degradation of language and of the clarity of language, both in the campus speech codes and in these federal statutes and the prosecutions based on the statutes. And I think, to try to put it in one sentence, there was a cultural shift in our country in the mid-80s, and this the culture on the campus is degraded, and the culture in our federal criminal justice system degraded.
All right, Harvey, I've got to go for a break. Do you have time to stay with me to the bottom of the hour, or you have to go? Harvey?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. Stand by. Our guest is Harvey Silverglate. He's a lawyer. His book is Three Felonies a Day, How the Feds Target the Innocent. And we'll be back with more with Harvey in a moment. This is Peter Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Thanks for joining us. It is Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. Our guest is Harvey A. Silverglate, the author of Three Felonies a Day, How the Feds Target the Innocent. We're down to about 3 minutes, Harvey, so I've got to ask you one quick question. The financial crisis. Should people face criminal charges for this?
Nope. And the reason I say that is that's really, first of all, it's a cop-out by the government, like the SEC, Department of Justice. They would love to blame the economic collapse on some miscreant out there who violated some of our statutes and regulations. The fact is that this was systemic. It was really in the fabric of the economy. We made huge mistakes, and we're paying for those huge mistakes. If you look closely at, for example, the Goldman Sachs case, they didn't do anything that was in violation of the law. They did what the law allowed. If the law was crazy, it should have been changed a long time ago. You know, there were a few people who actually saw what was happening and who either profited from it, you know, by shorting the markets, or they were screaming and yelling, we got to do something about this, but nobody was listening. But the fact is that if the law allowed what was done, and it did, then we can't blame so-called criminals. We have to blame, guess who? Ourselves and our government.
What about this new health care program where people are going to be fined if they don't take health insurance? Is that, do you think, constitutional?
I think it's a real close question, and it depends on how far the courts are going to allow the Constitution's Commerce Clause to be stretched. It's already been stretched to cover a huge variety of everyday tasks that the typical professional engages in. I think that the Commerce Clause has been really stretched out of all recognizable form. This is a further stretching. Will the courts finally say enough is enough and begin to return the country to a federalist system? I don't know. I do know I'm in Massachusetts. We have a state-run health plan in Massachusetts that actually has covered virtually everybody and seems to be working rather well. They're working on getting the costs of it down. Yeah. I don't understand why states can't do this and avoid these constitutional problems. A lot of things are done better on a state and local level than on a national level, because I think that the federal government is not particularly skilled these days and functional.
Harvey, thank you so much. Harvey Silverglate has been our guest. The book is Three Felonies a Day, How the Feds Target the Innocent. When we come back, I'm going to open up the phone lines for your comments. Do we have too many laws? Should we criminalize business actions, for instance? Because ultimately, the whole idea of... It boggles my mind the number of charges people face these days. Does it not you? My number is 1-800-449-8215. It's Peter Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation.
I never had a real job. I basically almost right out of graduate school came and worked as a very junior public servant at the Treasury and spent my entire professional life since in some form of policy job.
I've never had a real job. Truer words were never spoken. Timothy Geithner, our Secretary of the Treasury. I've never had a real job. Truer words were never spoken. I do want to talk about this proliferation of laws. It's not good in our society, particularly not from the federal government. As you know, that they've been trampling for years now on states' rights. And quite frankly, who do the states have to blame but the states themselves? Because this is how the scenario usually works. The feds offer some free money, I don't know, for highway construction, for schools or whatever. Like the true drug dealer that they are, they don't put any strings on the money at that time, or at least very few strings. And, of course, the state politicians or the local politicians are saying, what the hell, of course we'll take this money. You know, this way we're not going to be blamed for having to raise taxes, and we can, you know, give out largesse to our citizens and, hey, get reelected. But, of course, as the years go by, the feds put more and more strings on the money that they're giving. Like the true drug dealer, they now are demanding their price, their pound of flesh. And, of course, like the true addict, the state politicians start to whine because, one, they're addicted to the money, and, two, they don't want all these restrictions. Of course, it ends up costing them more because usually it requires some state financing as well, some state funding. Anyway, so the whole idea of the Fed so involved in the criminal system is outrageous, I must tell you. I want to share with you a couple of pieces that were written, one by Ed Fuelner, who I think is the president of the Heritage Foundation. I know he heads up the Heritage Foundation. I haven't got it. The title of this piece is called Give It a Rest. He talks about the 21st century American legal system where things are not so clear anymore. He talks about Lindsey Brown, who's a high school senior jailed for having a butter knife in her car, or Cortez Curtis, a 13-year-old arrested for bringing a calculator that contained tools, including a tiny knife blade, to school, or a 12-year-old handcuffed and detained for eating one French fry on a D.C. subway, or 61-year-old Kay Liebrandt booked for allowing her hedges to grow too tall. He says none of these people intended to break the law. In fact, they weren't even aware they were breaking a law. All are victims of a growing trend in American life, over-criminalization. And any one of us could be the next person arrested. Now, you put that down, along with these vile asset forfeiture laws, where the government moves to seize your assets, even though they cannot prove their case in criminal court. And I'm just reading a piece down in San Diego. The headline says, Feds push to seize restaurant, a rare one. Illegal workers at heart of French gourmet case. And they talk about the French gourmet, which is at Pacific Beach in Southern California there. It's been open since 1979. And for more than three decades, this restaurant has been serving high-end cuisine in its 45-seat dining room, catering events across the country, and producing hundreds of wedding cakes annually. And so the prosecutors are claiming that these people knowingly hired illegals. And so what does the government do? It's going to seize the restaurant. Now I ask you, this is a business decision. Should these people be at the receiving end of literally losing their business? You know, it's like somebody borrows the car. Some of these prostitution laws across the country, where if an act of prostitution is committed within your vehicle, without you knowing it, supposing you loaned your vehicle to someone, the vehicle ends up being seized. And this is not the American way. We have too many laws which allows bureaucrats to have far too much power because they can pick and choose whom they're going to go after. And then they throw hundreds and hundreds of charges at the, tens and tens of charges. All right, I'm embellishing, okay. But tens and tens of charges. And you sit there and you realize that defend yourself is hundreds of thousands of dollars, number one. And two, if any one of these stick, you end up doing time in a prison. So what do a lot of people do? They cop a plea. All right, here's my number, 1-800-449-8255. It is Peter Weisbach in on the Savage Nation. Let's go to Matt in Tyler, Texas. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, it's great to be here, Pete, and I'm ticked in Texas.
Ticked in Texas, I like that. That's called alliteration, I think, in literature.
Well,
go ahead.
I could go on, but let me get to the point. Yes, there is way too much complexity in our laws today. Some of it is natural, and that's okay, but complexity allows control by the ones that produce that which is complex. And it's our state and federal government officials that are doing that, so that when they want, if they want, if they find something that they don't like about us, they'll find something that they can hold us on, just like you were saying earlier, that we never did intend to do any wrong. And it's another tool of control. And it's,
you know, there should be something. Don't you think there should be something that makes it mandatory, either by state constitution or federal constitution, that all laws have to be sunsetted and they have to be renewed? Now, that would serve two purposes. One, it would make politicians actually take a look at the laws that they've passed and see how they've been operating. And secondarily, it would keep them busy enough that they couldn't constantly be adding another layer of laws upon another layer of laws upon another layer of laws.
You say that because you can look at the gun control laws, and you've had layer upon layer. You've had zero enforcement. We don't need more gun control laws. We need enforcement, pure and simple. We could take 90% of the gun control laws off the books, and if we'd enforce 10%, we'd be a lot safer.
Sir, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Next up, out of Chicago, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, a lot of the times somebody could be railroaded for something that they didn't even know they were doing anything wrong. They didn't know they were breaking a law, and it could be because of their politics, and they'll never know, because it could be a political witch hunt. But they'll never know, because the people who are prosecuting, they're not going to say it. So it could all be politically motivated in some cases.
Well, you know, in English common law, one of the great underpinnings of adjudicating a case or a potential case would be intent of the individual, the intent of the individual. That seems to be out the window now. Nobody cares whether there's intent or not to have broken the law.
I think a lot of it comes down to when a group of individuals don't like your politics, and they're just figuring out a way to get you.
Maybe. Sir, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Next, in Sacramento, we have Michael. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, glad to be on. The one you were talking about,
you know,
for what's going on with the economy, and it dawned on me that I remember reading about years ago when you opened a business and wanted to do business, you had a charter. And in that charter, one of the part of the language was that you would do business in the interest of the public good. And a very famous individual named Rockefeller, as he began to amass his fortune, would donate to certain politicians with the request that he could get around those laws.
And I don't ever remember that, and I've incorporated a number of companies. Now, they were private companies, not publicly traded companies, but I've never seen anything like that.
Well, this was at the turn of the century. It's no longer.
Can you point me somewhere to verify that?
Not offhand.
Now, that would be a good idea, though, if you did that for me, because I'd like to kind of have the details of that before I went about saying that is the way it is. All right, in Springfield, Massachusetts, we have Tom. Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I don't want to get theological. I draw a parallel with the Pharisees of the old, where they're just overly burdened with extra laws for the people to regulate their lives, and made it so difficult, and they were finally freed up when Jesus came. And now it seems like now, secular-wise, we have our lawmakers just so overburdening and taxing us. I see the people rising up and say, we want our freedom, and we want our able to escape this, like as you know, the parallel I just drew. It's ridiculous. I mean, ignorance is an excuse for the law. Now, there's just so many laws. You don't even know if you're breaking them. So I'm from Western Mass, where your author was from, your guest. So, yeah, I can kind of feel what he's talking about and writing about.
So tell me, Do you think there's still a sufficient number of people that understand the oppressive nature of having too many laws on the books and having such an activist government in Washington, D.C. as we have?
Oh, well, absolutely. I'm 41 years old, and my generation is not yet fully in power. All the radical 60s are in power, but we're coming in power, and we definitely see it. And there's an uprising and a movement going, and it's going to take hold. And they know it's not affecting us, so they go after our children, which are younger than us, in their teens and 20s, and try to indoctrinate them because they know they missed the boat on us. We were actually the first spawn of the 60s movement. I was born in 68, so they didn't really know how to handle us. They didn't know how to deal with us because it was like an experiment dish. They didn't even know what they wanted to do. Now their generation went by. Now they're indoctrinating our kids. So, yeah, it's pretty evil what they're doing. But getting back to the burdening, yes, I think there is some people, a little bit, that don't even know what laws are anymore. There's just so many. They're actually violating them. Tough.
Thank
you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Next up, we have... welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Ron. And my opinion is, I don't think anybody's gotten it right yet as far as all these laws go. What is right is it's the Trial Lawyers Association trying to stay employed. Now, if anybody in this country would have seen what was happening, I'm 16. I saw what was happening. I saw these lawyers getting in these laws. Then everybody in the country saw, guess what? All the diving boards in every pool across this country are gone now because all of a sudden these lawyers decided that if somebody fell off a diving board, they sued the people that owned it, so now we have no diving boards in any pools. That was the beginning. That was the first shot from these trial lawyers, of the first shot across our bow that we have all...
Connection here. I appreciate your points very much. Well, those, of course, are civil litigation trial lawyers. Harvey Silverglate, our guest in this hour, is a criminal defense lawyer that we're talking about, and we're really quite concerned. I think we're really talking about... Look, the civil litigation... And the limits in terms of settlements in that area is a different matter from what we're talking about. We're talking about criminal laws, felonies here. I mean, this little restaurant down there in Pacific Beach in California, not only are they facing criminal charges for having hired illegals, these are felonies, but the government wants to take away their business. I mean, that seems to me somewhat bizarre. I mean, short of them having enslaved these people, maybe having locked them up for 23 hours a day and paid them below minimum wage. Maybe there should be a civil fine for that, but certainly not a criminal. I mean, what a waste of government resources when you think about it. And for them to go after somebody's business on that basis. The number is 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. It is Weisbach. It is my honor and privilege to be sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Weisbach in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. Thank you for joining me as we talk about the proliferation of laws and criminalizing, over-criminalizing acts in our country. And what it means to our overall freedom. Let's go to Mark in Amarillo, Texas.
Yeah, I can't believe that you think that it's not okay to put these clowns in jail with hiring these illegal aliens purposely and seizing their restaurant.
I think no, that's the allegation that they're knowingly doing it.
Oh, good. Then seize the restaurant, try the case, and then seize it afterwards and sell it to... people who know how to run it. You know, like I said, that's why we have so much illegal aliens and stuff around the country.
I think that possibly the government should do something and actually be serious about immigration?
You're damn straight at you.
Do you think they're being serious now? Do you think by taking this person's restaurant they're being serious?
I think they should take more places of employment.
So maybe what they should do is really seal the border. What do you think?
Yeah,
so
I said
that. Maybe they should start doing that. Do you know how the system works and how the system is set up to fail? You know, they have the government database called E-Verify, right? Where if you apply for a job, I, as an employer, can check to see if you actually have authorization to work in the country. Do you know how that works, sir?
Yes, I sure do.
How does it work?
they kind of run the computer like on your Social Security card. And
right.
Your Social Security
at what point is the employer allowed to do that?
They're allowed. They should be allowed to do it anytime they want. Look, I'm not defending Obama.
No, it's not Obama. It's the Republicans as well. I'll tell you how it works. First, I say, Mark, you have the job. Now, just a minute, Mark. Let me check your... Mark, there seems to be a problem with your work authorization. Now, I'll tell you what, Mark. I'm going to spend all the resources and the money. I won't discriminate against you. I'm going to train you like everybody else. You have 8 working days to go to the government and get this situation resolved. Now, beyond that, you could probably get another 30 days. In the meantime, I, as the employer, am going to spend all this time and resources to train you. I won't discriminate against you. Now, that defies logic, does it not, sir?
Doesn't defy logic at all. We need to have something like that put into effect.
Hold on a second. The logical thing is, Mark, I'd like to give you this job, but I just ran you on E-Verify. It appears that there's a problem with your work authorization. Please go get it fixed up, and when that's fixed up, come back and apply for the job again. That is logic. It is illogical to have to hire you and to spend the resources of the company training you for 8 days because I know that you're probably 92% illegal. Do you follow what I said? Or are you just simply colored by your own biases?
No, as a matter of fact, I'll even go further. They should call immigration. They should be obligated to call immigration at that point to get this clown out of the country.
But they aren't. We're not talking about what they should be doing, sir. What we're talking about here is how the system actually works. And the system actually works this way. And please set aside, because this is all done by Republicans and Democrats. The Republicans, when in power, go out there and do some worksite raids and do some deportations. And they may get 0.00000001% of the illegals. The Obama administration goes after the employers, and they maybe get 0.00000001% of the illegals. Do they do anything, either party, about sealing the border? No. Does either party do anything about being honest about how many immigrants we really need to service this economy? No. And when it comes to E-Verify, the government database, it works like this. I must hire you first. Then I'm allowed to check the veracity of your Social Security number. If it comes up bad, I can't say, no, can't give you that job. I take away that job offer. I have to give you 8 working days to rectify the problem. Now tell me, should any business have to spend the time and resources to train somebody that's probably 90% for certain illegal? Should the business not be able to say, okay, I E-verified you. Oh, there's a problem with your authorization. I can't hire you. Please go get fix the problem. Then come back and see me. The government doesn't work that way. Both parties have set this bloody thing up to fail. And it's being used as a political football. So that's the reality of what's going on today. And the reality of what went on under the Republicans. Neither party really want to fix the problem. But it defies logic that you end up checking the Social Security number after you've hired the person. You're not allowed to do it before you hire the person. That's the reality of the system, the way it's set up by both Republicans and Democrats. All of them doing political posturing, nobody wanting to solve the problem. All right, that's all the time I have at the present time. It is Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to kick around a bit the immigration law as it stands today and what some of the states are doing, like Arizona particularly, which has started this whole movement that somehow becomes now a civil rights issue, which I always find somewhat amusing because the people constantly that are pro-immigration, and by the way, I am pro-immigration, legal immigration, I find it kind of amusing because the people that are supporting the illegal immigration are really doing it by kind of not drawing a clear distinction between legal immigration and illegal immigration. Now, first of all, we need legal immigration. We do. I mean, we have, they say 10 million illegals. It's got to be closer to 20 million and that kind of thing. But anyway, so here we have Arizona saying quite the contrary to some of the jurisdictions, say, in the state of Washington. I live in Seattle, where the city council in Seattle prohibits the local police force from inquiring about immigration matters altogether. The state of Arizona, as you know, has passed a law that requires the police to question people about their immigration status, including asking for ID if they suspect someone is in the country illegally. And this is the governor of Arizona, Jan Brewer, welcoming the press as she takes the step forward in protecting Arizona, she says. Play the sound clip, will you please?
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you all for being here today to join me as we take another step forward in protecting the state of Arizona. The bill I'm about to sign into law, Senate Bill 1070, represents another tool for our state to use as we work to solve a crisis that we did not create and the federal government has refused to fix. The crisis caused by illegal immigration in Arizona's porous border.
So she's absolutely right with this respect, that the federal government has refused to fix this problem, and that is both Republican and Democratic administrations. And all of this stuff, in terms of enforcement, is for nothing but press clippings. It does not get to the fundamental problem that we face. The problem being we've got millions and millions of illegals infused into our economy, and we do nothing to stop the supply in terms of closing up the border, which we certainly can do. Because anybody that says you cannot do that really means that you cannot defend your own borders, which is bizarre. Of course you can if you want to. But there isn't the will to do it. And first step should be to seal those borders. Secondarily, you have to deal with these many, many illegal immigrants that are in the country. I think it's bizarre the amount of money and energy that's involved in this and how people get so preoccupied with this immigration issue while we're literally burning on the economic front. I mean, we're sentencing ourselves to economic oblivion with the amount of spending that the federal government is doing and that our state governments are doing, that we have become tax slaves. And those of us today and our children and their children are tax slaves. We have turned over our economic destiny to China with this irresponsible spending by the federal government particularly. And so you then have the whole issue of immigration, which is now going to come to the forefront once again, being used as a political football. Because the Democrats don't care really whether they get this comprehensive immigration bill passed that they're about to put forward, whatever is in it. They just want to mobilize their base to try to stem the losses that they're going to face in November. But no one is seriously talking about solving this problem. Everybody uses it as a political football. Here you have President Obama responding to what the state of Arizona did.
I've instructed members of my administration to closely monitor the situation and examine the civil rights and other implications of this legislation. But if we continue to fail to act at a federal level, we will continue to see misguided efforts opening up around the country.
So how could it be misguided, what Arizona's doing? I mean, they have people trampling across their citizens, their residents' property, constantly, every night, coming up from Mexico. And then, of course, for Al Sharpton, this, of course, is a cornucopia. It is Selma all over again for him, and he calls it Freedom Workers. He's about to go walk shoulder to shoulder with his illegal friends at La Raza, or at least the La Raza representing the illegals of the country. Here's what Sharpton had to say.
We will bring people from around the country to Arizona to be freedom walkers, where we will walk down the streets with no ID.
Ooh,
and
wow.
Submit ourselves to arrest. What is the difference between us and any Mexican or any Haitian or anyone else?
All right, so that is that frames the issue, I suppose. But clearly, and certainly in talk radio, this is a great forum for constantly debating the very same issue. And I've done it for years, as many talk show hosts have, and there's been no resolution to it. Have you noticed? There's no resolution to it because, quite frankly, neither party wants a resolution. They simply want to use it as a political football for political gain while doing nothing about it. Because all of the, you can take this guy's restaurant in Pacific Beach, and it just is such an infinitesimally small percentage of the problem. It ain't ever going to solve. We can do one thing. We can seal the border. We can live up to the fact that we need to have X number of immigrants come in to take these jobs and to be honest and open about it. And thirdly, we have to deal with the millions that are here. But nobody wants to figure it out. And it becomes such a hot political football in talk radio. Everybody gets in a flap over it. And, you know, if it's controlled properly, too, one of the requirements of coming into the country is you got to come here because you want to come here and you want to end up coming to live in this country is what you want to do. Because you want to come here and you got to learn to read and speak English. All right, let's take some phone calls here. By the way, the number is 1-800-449-8255.
Good evening, Weisbrot.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the Arizona situation needs followers. In other words, here's a state that has stepped out and shown some leadership on this matter. Where are the rest of us going to the people that we can put pressure on in each of our states to fall in behind Arizona? We've got the enemy within in Washington, D.C., in the White House, preparing to fight Arizona. Where are we supporting our leader? There are states like Utah, Montana, also, I understand Oklahoma has taken similar initiatives to protect our country. Where are we and what can we do to put pressure on those we know?
So tell me, do you think that if the Republicans were in power and Bush was still in the White House, they would react any differently to what Arizona's doing?
Yes, I think the Bush reaction would be much different.
Huh, in what way? In what way?
Well, it wouldn't be so blatantly anti-American.
Let me remind you of the plan that the president put forth, President Bush. President Bush's plan went something like this. I'm going to allow American companies to advertise for positions at X number of dollars per hour. If they can't fill them, they can fill them from the third world, which brought Pat Buchanan with this perfect analogy. He talked about a car wash, an American car wash that was established that was paying, say, $12 or $15 an hour. It had medical benefits. And down the road, a block down the road, somebody else opens up a car wash, starts advertising for people at minimum wage, say $7, no benefits. And guess what? They can't attract anybody. So what do? They advertise. They can't attract anybody. They then bring in people from the third world to man their car wash. So what happens? The car wash gets established. It gets staffed. And over a period of a year and a half, 2 years later, the original car wash, which paid benefits and paid $12 to $15 an hour, goes out of business because it can't compete with the other one. That was President Bush's idea. You think that he handled it any better or differently than the Democrats are today?
Well, I think we can agree, Weisbrot, that Bush and Obama
are both controlled by the same puppet masters, or the what I call the presidential puppeteers. In other words, the same people are pulling the strings. The same people.
Who are the people pulling the strings?
I beg your pardon?
Who are the people pulling the strings?
The people pulling the strings are the George Soros One World Order group, who arranged for the wiring of the buildings in Lower Manhattan.
Oh no! Are you serious?
Well, let me tell you what I'm serious about.
Goodbye. No, get rid of him. I don't have time for this nonsense. Time for a break, and then there's a line open, the 1-800-449-8255. You know, the bottom line to all of this is, hey, guess what? We still have the power. Guess what? We have the means to communicate with one another, and you're seeing it since the Tea Party movement has started. We have the ability to bypass the big national newspapers. We have the ability to bypass the big national television networks, and Americans are doing it. Conservatives are doing it. Independents are doing it. They're getting together. They're protesting. And look at the change that's happened that in front of our very eyes. There's not some conspiracy that's controlling our politicians. They're doing it because they're self-centered. By and large, most of them are. And all they're concerned about is their own butt, and that's to get reelected. There ain't no big conspiracy. There aren't a bunch of bankers sitting in a room planning our future. The future that we have is the future that we take. We are in control of our future. You can believe that, and you can bank on that. There ain't no conspiracy that put us in this position. We're in this position because we haven't stood up and said, hey, enough is enough. And I think that a lot of people in this country, and I hope it's a majority of the people, are now at that point where they say, enough is enough. Wise back, in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage.
We'll be up to each of you to make sure that the young people, African Americans, Latinos, and women who powered our victory in 2008 stand together once again. It will be up to each of you to keep our nation moving forward, to keep working to fix Washington, to keep growing our economy, and to keep building a fairer, stronger, and more just America.
Keep growing our economy. What's this guy smoking? He must be inhaling. That's unbelievable, those things that he's talking about. This guy is not growing an economy. He is slowly suffocating an economy. And short of hyperinflation, I don't know how we can get out of this problem. Because even if Republicans got back into power with a majority, do you think they have the Giulianis to actually claw back the spending? Aren't they going to try to grow themselves out of it with cutting taxes once again? Well, that's what Bush did. He cut taxes, but did he cut spending? No. He increased spending. All right, back to the phone lines. Next up, we have Bill in Sacramento. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. The reason why the Republicans or the Democrats are not going to do anything about illegal immigration is because of the unclaimed federal tax.
Explain. What do you mean, unclaimed federal tax?
Well, if you have an illegal alien using a fake Social Security number of a dead guy or whatever, or somebody, or something that he stole, he's never going to claim the federal income tax. He's not going to file a tax return. So the Social Security Department knows that these Social Security cards are no good, so they just turn them over to the IRS. The IRS says, oh, these are no good, so they're not going to claim the taxes, and the tax money goes right into the pool.
I have to think about that. Wasn't there a deal recently that people, Mexicans who were illegal and finally became legal, could claim all of the money that they had paid before, and they could get their Social Security while living in Mexico? Didn't that happen under the Bush administration?
I don't think so. I lived in Mexico myself for a period of time, and there was a lot of Mexicans that migrated back south of the border, and they never claimed anything, unemployment or Social Security.
Yeah, I know, but this was a change under the Bush administration, and I remember I was quite ticked off about it, but it was something to that effect, and I'm not quite clear on the details. It's a little fuzzy, but maybe somebody else out there is, and they can give us a call and set me straight. Next up, we have...
How are you doing? Thank you for taking my call. I would just like to say my hats off to the governor in Arizona. I think they should go ahead and, you know, check IDs. I think they should find people who hire the Hispanic community that don't have the proper paperwork, who don't have documentation. I am presently in the process of the immigration with my wife from an Asian country. I speak and I write Spanish, English. I'm learning the Asian language. And I can tell you, that is the most backwards paperwork I've ever done in my entire life. The left hand does not know what the right hand is doing, and if the right hand does know what it's doing, the thumb doesn't know what the pinky is doing. Social Security doesn't know what nothing is. These guys are lost. It is difficult. It's hard. And I just, you know, I don't think we should bend over backwards to speak Spanish here.
Of course not. You don't want to become a bilingual country. Absolutely not. But, you know, the government is just totally inefficient. Of course the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. I mean, you've got government departments suing one another, for God's sake. I mean, think about that for a moment, huh? The money that they're spending, your life energy. This is Peter Weisbach. It is my honor and privilege to be sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. This is Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. It is an honor and a privilege to be sitting here filling in for Michael. I want to just throw something else into the mix of our discussion this afternoon. This goes back to a piece in Associated Press on February 12th. But I bring it up because of this perversion of language that has been going on, particularly under this administration. And you have Obama talking about Lincoln. And he's urging Americans to follow in Lincoln's example. And it's an absolute perversion of what Lincoln was really saying or talking about. So the story goes like this. It says, summoning the pride of a nation, President Barack Obama paid fond tribute to Abraham Lincoln by challenging people to embrace his vision of a collective union and reject a knee-jerk disdain of government. He recognized that while each of us must do our part, work as hard as we can, and be as responsible as we can. In the end, there are certain things we cannot do on our own, Obama said of Lincoln at the celebration of the president's 200th birthday. Obama's quoted as saying, there are certain things we can only do together. There are certain things only a union can do. The stories of Obama and Lincoln have become entwined by history, geography, and symbolism. Their paths are viewed not just as their own, but the country's as well, a lineage from the man who freed the slaves to the first black president. Obama said Lincoln understood that self-reliance was at the core of American life, but Obama said individual liberty is served, not negated by recognition of the common good. Now notice this little play on words here, ladies and gentlemen, that here is Obama making the pitch that a bigger government serves freedom. It's the absolute antithesis of what government that grows too big is, and certainly everything that the founders stood against, everything that the founders feared. They wanted a limited federal presence for the very fear of knowing that a government that grew and grew and grew was a threat to everybody's freedom. Anyway, I continue on with the story. The pendulum, Obama said, has swung too far toward a philosophy that says government is the problem, a notion that should be that it should be dismantled with tax breaks for the wealthy that might eventually help everyone. Notice how they play on the politics of envy. Again, the antithesis of what this country is about. You know, one of the things that this country has been about is it has never had this kind of class situation develop that exists in England, for instance, and that we have stayed away from socialism for years and years and years, decades and decades, unlike our brethren and friends over in Europe, or indeed north of us up in Canada. Obama goes on to say that such knee-jerk disdain for government, this constant rejection of any common endeavor, cannot rebuild our levees or our roads or our bridges. His list of collective examples went on: better schools, modern health care, an economy built on clean energy. Only a nation can do these things, Obama said. Only by coming together, all of us, and expressing that sense of shared sacrifice and responsibility can we do the work that must be done in this country. That is the very definition of being American. This is a total and absolute perversion of the founding principles of this country. And here you have this president of the United States talking about the federal government being responsible for better schools. There is no place in the Constitution that the federal government is charged with any responsibility for education or for building an economy of clean energy. Now, one can say that certainly on the state and local level that we as citizens can decide to do something like that, but it certainly is not in the federal Constitution. All right, back to our phone calls. Next up, welcoming to the Savage Nation, we have Helen in Tennessee.
Thank you, sir. The problem has lasted too long, sir. Arizona asked for help. Did they get any help, sir? No, it escalated. Now, the problem is they need to be strong and stick to the point and do what they're doing and don't back away, because this has been happening for a long time. The bottom line is there's too many coming over, and we don't even know if some of them are terrorists, sir, because it has been told.
I don't disagree with you on that, but again, the act by Arizona is merely symbolism, as is the work site raids made by the Republicans was merely symbolism. The attack on employers by the Democratic administration is merely symbolism. It is dealing with the symptom. It is not getting at the causal problem. And until we decide, I mean, really, when you think about and follow the logic of what's being said, the border is too long to be closed. In other words, you cannot stop people from coming in illegally. If that is the case, then the federal government has failed in its primary responsibility, which is to defend the borders. They have said that it is impossible for them to defend the borders, so therefore the primary reason for the existence of the federal government is null and void. Of course they can defend the border. We sure as hell hope they can defend the border, and of course they could close the border if they so choose. Neither party wants to do that. They fool around on the fringes. Now, look, Senator John McCain, one of the premier squishes of the Republican Party, is feeling the heat for his political life, and all of a sudden, he's now campaigning against illegal immigration, whereas before he was one of the primary movers of this flawed legislation coming out of the Bush administration, which I told you about earlier, where it said that American employers could kind of advertise for minimum wage jobs. If they weren't getting any response to fill those positions, they could literally start to bring in people from the third world countries. Now, what a bizarre answer. Of course we need immigration, but we need legal immigration. And this constant blurring of the line between legal and illegal is nonsense. Who's this now? Derek in Texas. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
How you doing? Can you hear me all right?
I can.
Okay. Hey, I'm a black man, and this is what I have to say. I hope you don't hang up on me. When I decided that I wanted to sell drugs here in the state of Texas to support my family, because I didn't have no fancy house and expensive cars and none of that from the money. But when I decided to do that, I decided to break the laws that was set. I satisfied my debt to Texas. I went to prison. I got out, did my parole. Now I'm perfectly employed. My point is this. If the law is good enough for me, whom I'm a citizen, a taxpaying citizen from day one, how can somebody stand up and fight for a group of people that committed this great crime, which is sneak across the border in the first place? That's number one. Number two, I went to the unemployment office the other day to take my cousin up there. I noticed that 95% of those people that was in there was black and white. I read in the paper where they're saying like 8 million illegal aliens are employed. If you take those 8 million people and put them back in a country and give America, the Americans, those same jobs, it would cure a lot of our problems with unemployment.
So why are the Americans not going to get those jobs?
It's very easy. Very, very clear. Because the American... the mom and pop businesses, the business owners here in America, they are opting out for the cheaper. They don't. They
want to pay the cheaper.
But you know, I understand that there's an element of that. But you know, if you take a look at the Service Employees International Union that represent healthcare workers, represent janitors, represent hotel workers, housekeepers, that kind of stuff, they're far from minimum wage jobs. I mean, they have health welfare programs that are funded by the employer. They pay well above minimum wage. And when you take a look at some of the raids that take place by ICE, a lot of the people employed in those industries are illegal. So how do you account for that?
Right. And I notice here in Texas, just in the area where I live in Dickinson, Texas. See, I don't have a problem with who know me. I live here in Dickinson, Texas. And I know all of the Burger Kings, the McDonald's, all of them, they filled up. And I know for a fact that they have illegal aliens.
You're not addressing my question. How do you account for the fact that these people that are members of the Service Employees International Union, that service hotel housekeeping, that wait in some of the bigger restaurants or in the hotels, or that clean office buildings, that when you see raids of companies, that contractors that provide those services, how do you account for the fact that they have illegals? They're not paying minimum wage. They're well above minimum wage, and they're paying a benefit. So it's not a matter of them hiring illegals because they're getting them at a cheaper rate.
Well, I think the Americans want the same jobs, and they will take the same jobs if they had that opportunity.
But of course they have that opportunity. Why wouldn't they have the opportunity?
Because it's easier to hire illegals from work.
You're missing my point. You're so entrenched in your own way of thinking that you're not listening to what the problem is. Yes, of course, there are some people that are taking advantage of illegals. And there are some people that are paying minimum wage, and they're doing it, and illegals are working for less than that. But my point being that a lot of these people work at jobs that pay more than the minimum wage and have benefits. Why are these jobs not being taken by legal Americans? So those aren't being exploited, those people. I mean, so why? Clarence in Albany, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello. Yes. Am I on the air?
You are.
Yes. Thank you for taking the call. Yes, I want to give my support to the governor of Arizona, and I want to remind her that Al Sharpton is supposed to be a reverend, so I want to dedicate this verse to her from Ephesians chapter 6, and when you've done all you can to stand, stand. Don't back down no matter what he says, because she is the example to this country, and we really need her. And thank you for taking the call.
All right. Thanks for your call. Next, we have Jack in Sacramento. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes. You know, I traveled around different parts of the Pacific Rim, you know, Asia, Vietnam, Thailand, and so forth. As soon as you show up there, even in their little hotels, they immediately ask you for your passport. And not only that, if you're a day late, you're paying $15 a day in Thailand, and if you don't have the money, you go right to jail.
No.
Until you pay the money. And I don't get why, you know, this country, there's so many other countries that we need to look at to see much. They're much, much tighter. Even in the Philippines, you can't stay more than 20 days without leaving a country. Our country, you know, saying they're cracking down on illegals when... Try going to another country. Try going to China or Japan and overstaying, or even getting in the country without a passport. You're going to jail.
Well, all of this, of course, as you know, is a diversion for the American people.
Sure.
You know that. It's used as a political football.
For what? For votes, then, you're saying?
Yeah, it mobilizes the base. I mean, for how long look, this was supposed to have been solved in 1986 when Ronald Reagan gave amnesty. Going forward, that was going to clean the slate. Was anything ever done to secure the border? No. Has anything been done? You know, you can sit there and argue with me all you want, but I'll tell you that we need immigrants to man a number of these jobs. We don't have enough of a local population, of our own population, to deal and man all these jobs.
California, though, I mean, that's fine, but we're a state that's in bankruptcy and doesn't know what to do.
I agree with you, but no, is anybody seriously doing anything about this?
Not, but I mean, when? You tell me. When are the
when lights? When is it going to happen? When you're going to take some of these whores that are in Washington, D.C. in Congress and boot their collective butts out of office? That's how it's going to happen. It's going to happen when people get up off their butts and start to do something about it and start to get rid of some of these vermin that are running for these political parties and getting rid of them at the primary level and doing it again and again until you get the result that you want.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand. When I come back from Asia and go through San Francisco, man, they one time they thought I had, you know, where's my laptop? Where's my laptop? You know, and I'm a citizen. I've been here 50 years or whatever. And then you look down south and what's going on down there, and it's like you got to wonder what the hell is going wrong in government in this country.
All right, sir, I got to go. Thanks for your call. That opens up a line at 1-800-449-8255. Peter Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. It is Peter Weisbach sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. It's been, a couple of 3 years, I think, since I've done that. It is an honor and a privilege to have been here for the past little while, sitting down and chatting with you. We'll finish off this segment, continuing our discussion on immigration and the proliferation of laws and the perversion of our founding principles. Next up, we have in Sacramento, Demos. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Thank you. for all the finger-pointing that I, in this country, about who is responsible for illegal immigration, I haven't heard anyone point the finger at the real source of the problem, in my opinion, and that is Mexico.
Now, how are they the source of the problem?
Well, if Mexico, if the government of Mexico wasn't so corrupt, and they provided jobs what the Mexicans needed in Mexico, they wouldn't have to leave their country to come here or go elsewhere to look for employment.
I agree with you, and I think that one of the primary reasons that both Democratic and Republican administrations have really only played lip service to dealing with illegal immigration and sealing the border is they won't seal the border because they're afraid that they're going to trigger a revolution in Mexico. I think because I think very clearly that country is so corrupt. It is turning quickly into a narco state anyway, and our politicians sit back and do nothing. But once again, it comes back to you and me. Look in the mirror. You know, it is really truly us. We do have the power to get rid of these people. You know, we have the means to communicate with one another now through the web, and you're seeing it. I mean, the wellspring of the Tea Parties, I mean, really gives me great hope. I think a number of people have great hope about that. That people who wouldn't think of going out and demonstrating are doing so because they see the direction that this country is taking, and they're saying, you know, I'm not going to go for this. I am not going to be a tax slave and give up my life energy for these bizarre ideas of these socialists. This is not what this country is about. And if people like Obama want that kind of a country, they should really move to that country.
I agree, and you talk about a revolution in Mexico. Well, that's exactly what's needed, and we need to put the cap on the bottle here and force a revolution there, because that's the only way that these people will get rid of the corruption and the cronyism and the narco based
narco
economy.
All right, sir, I must move along, but thank you for your call. Next up, Fran, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I definitely think that we need to seal the borders before we do anything else.
Well, I mean, you can do that concurrently, quite frankly, but you know they need to deal with that. But they're not going to do that, and they're not going to do that until enough of these people get defeated and don't get reelected.
Well, yeah, that's true indeed. But here's the thing: your last caller was saying that yes, if we seal the borders, it's going to cause a revolution in Mexico. I understand that, but America is at a standpoint now where until we can make everyone know that this is a sovereign nation, they need to come here legally, nothing is going to be accomplished.
Sir, I agree with you. Thank you for your call. I appreciate your call. John, in Denver, welcome to the Savage Nation. You will be our last caller today. Go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I'd just like to make a few quick points. My friend in Sacramento, bingo, dead on, I love him. The problem
is Mexico's a failed state right now. I don't know how much economic aid we give them annually, but we need to tie it to some reforms that we believe will help stem the tide of this immigration crisis. Secondarily, I think what's going on in Arizona is fantastic because it's actually a state standing up.
All right, sir, I appreciate your call. Sorry I had to cut you off, but I'm running out of time, and I wanted to make one final comment. We shouldn't be directing Mexico. We shouldn't be sending any aid to Mexico to anybody. We are a bankrupt nation. We are. And we need to get our own house in order before we, you know, have any more largesse. I think maybe the Chinese should take over our role in terms of being the big benefactors of the world. Because after all, they've got the surpluses. They got some $2 trillion of our American dollars. And so they should be dealing with these problems. All right, that's all the time that I have. My thanks to Michael Savage for the honor of sitting in for him. This is Peter Weisbach on the Savage Nation. Goodbye.